All right. So, good evening, everybody. My name is Colleen. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. And thank you, Andriette, I see you there, for asking me to speak. I'm really grateful. Anytime I get an opportunity to be of service in this program, it's one small way of giving back to from something that I've been given my entire life. To qualify, I've been abstinent. My abstinence date is August 4, 2002, so I'm going to be 21 coming up, I'm me willing, in a few weeks. Can't believe it. Time flies. My top weight that I know was 311 pounds, so I've been maintaining about 165, 107 pound weight loss probably for about 18, 19 years now. Let me see if I can show my pictures here. Okay, so I would start with this. I was a pretty active little kid, and I think when I was around 8 or so, I kind of started to put some weight on. Clearly, I had issues with sugar early on. Clearly, I was mischievous, getting myself into trouble. Let's see if I can. There we go. Is my scroll bar. Okay. And then when I reached like middle school or whatever, again, the weight started to come on a little bit. When I was in high school, I was a dancer. I was probably one of the fattest dancers, but I loved it. I didn't really care. When I got into college, my weight just kept going up. As I finished up college, actually tried to do Well, I tried to do some body positivity stuff, but I remember I bought this book on living large and loving it. And I lived large, but I didn't love it. And I did some actually work as a plus size model and stuff. And that seemed to all be about could you get down to a size 16? I thought, what is this about? I tried to be sort of walk around pretending like I wasn't the big person that I was. And this is me when I graduated with my bachelor's degree. And this was me right before I came into program. This was a couple weeks before I entered. I was a bridesmaid at a friend's wedding. Bridesmaids' dresses aren't too flattering on any size, but certainly not at this weight. And then this was me about a month into program. I was a school teacher at the time. And so this was the school picture a couple weeks into the year. And I had entered the rooms probably a few weeks before, just to kind of give you a sense of how big I got. After a year of abstinence, this was me. And I'll talk more in detail about this. So about 2 years of abstinence, this is me. And then, pretty much today, this is me when I got my graduate degree, because unlike my bachelor's degree, I did not eat my way through my graduate degree. And then I actually went back into some modeling work and stuff. And that was still not the best world to be in, but it was a different experience, for sure. So I'll stop sharing. And I just show those because I remember a few years into program, I walked into a room and some lady looked at me and like under her breath goes, "Well, she must be one of those anorexic chicks." And I thought, "Oh, you have no idea." I mean, I was certainly what I would call like a reverse anorexic. I used to look in the mirror and I did not see the big body that was standing in front of me. And I remember even like when I was in high school, and I was getting ready and thinking like, oh, I look okay, I look kind of cute. And we in the hallways and stuff, we had these it was an indoor outdoor sort of school, and so there were these glass doors basically. And so I remember I was walking like in the hallway area in the breezeway, and I see the door like close, and I see this reflection back at me, and I was just like, great. It doesn't seem to matter what I do. Like I clearly look like a fat blob, and my head was full of all kinds of horrible things about myself because the best way for me to adapt was to make fun of me before you made fun of me because clearly you're thinking about me because I think about me all the time, don't you? And it was a lot of my weight served certain purposes. It didn't really start to come on until I was about like middle schoolish age, probably when I reached puberty. At least that's the probably a little bit before that was when I knew it was an issue because My mother brought me to Weight Watchers when I was 10. And I hated that because there were all these old people there. They were probably in their 20s, but when you're 10, they all seem old. And I remember some lady raising her and asking about how it was like she would get the fudge pops, but she ate the whole thing and she couldn't figure out how not to do that. Today, I would say she probably belongs in our program, but I was just like, all I knew is it was something of like eating a bunch of stuff I didn't like, and I already felt like I stood out like a sore thumb anyways. The last thing I wanted was to have to eat differently. So I don't know. I think my mother, I think, did it with me. She always had a little bit of extra weight on her, but nothing like me, but there was this wall that you had to go behind to get weighed. I mean, the whole thing was just horrid and not a really a place for a kid. And it just made it clear to me that like my weight and my body was not acceptable to my mother. Everybody's got their own stuff. I know she meant well. It just, didn't, I wasn't there to receive it. So what I learned how to do was like not eat in front of her and how to hide things. I'll never forget, I was in high school and we went to visit some family friends of ours. And I was hanging out with a daughter who was a couple years older than me, like she had her driver's license and everything. And she opened up her closet and she had like bags of chips and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, brilliant idea. Just hide it in my bedroom. Yeah, probably not the best thing. Well, I suppose it accelerated my disease, So there was a brief period when I lost a little bit of weight when I was in, I think my freshman year of high school. I begged my parents to buy me this diet I found in the back of a teen magazine. And I lost weight because I think I was eating like 700 calories a day. And so the irony of all this was that like I followed it diligently, like letter of the law. I couldn't stand it because I wasn't eating all the things I really liked to be eating. And I was dancing all day, I mean, after school and stuff like that. And my parents sat me down because they were worried that I wasn't eating enough. I was like, I can't win with you people. Like, you don't want me eating, and now I'm not eating, and now I should be eating. And I was just like, it just made it clear that like there was nobody I could talk to about this sort of stuff. And so it just made more of like me dealing with things and me isolating in my disease at an early age. And there was also something, I did lose a little bit of weight. And I became obsessive about it, trying to get down to a particular number. And at that point I hit a plateau. I didn't know what that was. All I knew is I wasn't eating my favorite things and I was not losing any more weight. And so I just kind of gave up after a while. But there was a particularly distinctive experience I had where a girlfriend of mine was hanging out at my house and her dad came over to pick her up. And, we're family friends and stuff like that. And he looked at me and I saw him look me up and down. And he said, wow, Colleen, you look great. Now, it was a completely appropriate, very innocent expression. He was happy for me or whatever. But internally, I went, because there was something about that experience. And, one of the things that I've discovered over the years is there was this bizarre sense of invisibility at being so heavy. Because after a while, it seemed like people just all treat you the same when you're past a certain size, anyways. And so I could sort of hide behind all those pounds. And they also served the purpose of like, I didn't have a voice where I could say, I'm sorry, I'm not comfortable with you coming close to me. And so it was another way of saying, like, in a very kind way, like, back off. And if you do touch me, I probably can't feel it anyways. I was very disconnected from my body because in my mind, my body was the enemy. I'd had some difficult experiences as a really young child at home and thought my body was betraying me. And I just sort of made a decision early on that like it was the enemy, and I think that was part of how I treated it that way. And then of course, like even though my weight didn't start coming on till I was like 10 or so, sugar was a thing early on. Like that was really clear. Like we didn't keep a lot of like really sugary things in our house. We didn't have sugar cereals. But I found a way to put sugar on everything. And when I think back of some of the things I used to eat for breakfast, amazing, absolutely amazing. And it's really a surprise to me that I didn't have, I was in my late 20s when I came into program. And I was probably heading in the direction of diabetic or pre-diabetic or any of those issues. But I didn't have any of them. So there was nothing screaming at me like, you have to take care of this right now. And thank God for that on some level. But on the other hand, it
15. Oh.
really what it was, thank you. It brought me, I was at like a very clear, like spiritual bottom. Like, and I remember very distinctly, it had gotten to the point where I'd had a couple of incidences where like I'd go into a restaurant and I'd go to fit in the booth and the hostess would get that embarrassing look like, oh God, she's not gonna fit. And she'd be like, why don't you sit at the table over here? And I'm like mortified. And so that experience of like looking at myself and not really seeing how big I was, I then began to experience how big I was. And I couldn't lie to myself anymore, like that seemed to be a real key piece. And I remember this therapist I was seeing at the time recommended OA. I think I'd been to a meeting once when I was in college, and it was some girl talking about home for Thanksgiving, worried about she was eating. And I was like, I think about it all the time. I don't need to be in a place where people talk about that. But she mentioned that I might like the camaraderie or something. And I was like, okay, whatever. But I was just, I was open enough, and I remember coming into the meetings. And, there's something about the fact that you're all just like clap, matter what I say, and like say thank you for sharing, and then that's it. Like, and I'm like, okay, and people talked about food in a way that I never heard them talk about food and what they did with food. And I was like, oh, other people do that too, like they get the thin mints and they don't know how to not just eat a couple of them. And cookie dough is not meant to be eaten raw. Like, oh, you have that experience too? Like, I thought that's what it was for, And anyways, so the other thing that struck me was that when I walked in the rooms, the third meeting that I went to, those steps were on the wall. And I noticed this interesting thing that there was this God mentioned in almost all the steps. And I was like, And I had a spirituality. I was raised in a particular faith, and I had a very strong spiritual sensitivity. So I wasn't opposed to that. It just had never dawned on me to, like, there were starving children in Africa or other places in the world. Like, clearly, God had bigger things to deal with than what was on my plate. And so it just sort of like turned something in my mind. And it's really crucial in what was read at the beginning, in step five, how it works. Like I was saying, I made a decision as a child, and of course I wasn't conscious of that my body was the enemy. And decisions are really powerful. And Bill's story talks about how or I forget, early on in the big book, he says, like, we make lots of resolutions but never a decision. And it says in chapter five on page 50, if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And that's a really crucial piece. Like, I remember when I came into the rooms, I was kind of not sure what I was doing, but I was a very good rule follower. I felt probably safe for the first time in my life, like being able to be honest and whatnot. And just be myself. And I do think that's one of the true gifts of this program. And within that, there was some space to begin to be honest. And it didn't mean that I made drastic changes to my food right away. As you can see, even after a year of abstinence, I still had a good amount of weight to lose. But there were some crucial steps that I made in the beginning about being willing to sort of take the hand of another person and not try and figure this out on my own. I was a pretty smart person, but I couldn't figure this out, I remember even once sort of thinking about like the seven deadly sins, and whenever I would think about gluttony, I'd be like, I was trying to be a good person, but I couldn't quite wrap my head around that, like that one seemed to have me by the tail, And how could I? I mean, food was not the enemy, food was my solution. So anyways, it was really for me, I would say, and I'll start to wrap up here. After a year of abstinence, and having about was 6 months in, was I stopped eating blatant sugar, which was probably my primary alcoholic food, and having some space in my head and in my experience being away from that substance, like it talks about in Bill's story, that like, or in the doctor's opinion, you know, that like we cannot differentiate the true from the false when we are wrapped in by the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind.
Your 10 minute warning.
Thank you. And so what it was for me was that like, I realized, okay, I'm still carrying some extra weight because I stopped eating sugar. So I'd lost some weight, but I was still eating a lot of other things. And I thought, either I'm doing this or I'm not doing this. And so I made a decision. I was like, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. You know, this program will come first. And that was a decision that I made. And really, it was then that like things really began to shift for me. In terms of like, I went from going to 3 meetings a week to going to at least 5 meetings a week. I went from calling in my food at the end of the day to committing my food ahead of time, to getting on the scale once a week, which I hated because I hated the scale. To, you know, committing to doing a service position, to really throwing myself into my steps and doing all the things that I do. I got a new sponsor. She was a 100-pounder who kept her weight off for years and years. And, you know, she said, you have to pray and meditate every day. She said, I don't care how you do it or what you do. And I was like, all that happens when I meditate is fall asleep. She's like, you get a timer, you set it for 2 minutes and you sit there. When your 2 minutes are done, you get up and you, I was like, all right, I can do that, you know? And I just began to really sort of open my eyes. I don't remember what point in my life, it was probably around that time when I got into program that I began to think, I need to learn how to think differently. Because clearly there was some sense that like the way I was thinking and behaving had gotten me where I was, and I didn't want to be there anymore enough that I was willing. It was painful enough. You know, I've heard a number of long timers and my sponsor talk about like being so beaten down that like you're willing to change. That's really what it was. Like I just had no other place to go. You know, and I think about that each day, you know, when I take the actions that I do for my program, because I still pray and meditate every day. I still commit my food. I still get on the scale once a week. You know, I still have service positions. I'm a sponsor. You know, I do service at meetings. I do service, you know, in intergroups and regionally, et cetera. And I continue to practice the steps. You know, I do 10 steps regularly. And this program and this path of the 12 steps is absolutely genius to me. And I practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, I work in a pretty high powered job at a hospital. And sometimes I feel like such an imposter, like what are these people that have no idea. But, you know, I have a fair amount of responsibility. And the only way to handle that and handle the team of people that are under me is by practicing these principles in all my affairs, not taking their inventory, but taking mine, you know, and learning how to integrate really the 12 steps in everything that I do. And I've had pretty miraculous experiences. I've had a lot of healing in my family. And I've had a lot of growth in many other areas. And it's opened up doors for me to be able to do, make room for more healing in areas that I couldn't have even touched if I was still on the food, you know? Because one of the things most people tell you if you're around long enough is that like food is but a symptom. And so, you know, like it says, we deal with causes and conditions and there's lots of those and they come up, you know? And but the thing is, I have a way of dealing with them today. And, you know, so for me, and I'm sorry, I forgot to say welcome to the newcomers as well. You know, the very first meeting I went to, this anorexic woman spoke, and I could have just walked right out of the meeting. But, you know, she said, go to 6 meetings before you do anything else, before you make any decisions. And not only that, I was really touched that like after the meeting, she volunteered to stay and talk to me. And she said, listen, I don't have your experience of being the size that you are, but what I can tell you is this. And just the fact that she cared enough, you know, and like that, again, was just not something I had experienced before. And I still get the biggest kick out of like, you can like verbally vomit for a minute on people. You talk about the solution and then they like clap and they're like, yeah, thank you. I'm like, y'all nuts. But I returned the favor because that's how we do this. You know, it was funny. A sponsee said something to me about how You know, she's been going through some tough stuff and she really appreciated it. And I said, you're welcome. And I said, this is what we do. You know, it's what my sponsor says to me. And I can get into a tizzy about, like, I thought I'd be further along, or I thought I'd have this going for me in my life or whatever. And it's like, one of the things that I realized is that when I do think back on things that I thought as a kid, you know, when I, and I'm talking about a kid, like after I had had my whatever, what it was, I ate and I passed out and like was falling asleep and like praying that God made me skinny when I woke up or something ridiculous like that, whatever dreams or ideas I had about what life would be like as an adult when I would finally get out of the house or, you know, whatever my thing was, that it doesn't look like anything I thought it would, but I feel the way I always wanted to feel. And that is that, like, you know, when my head hits the pillow at the end of the night and I'm abstinent, like no matter what happened that day, if I was thrown about by all kinds of emotions or just life experiences, and some days it's just tough being human because this is not an easy ride. But I have a faith in a higher power that I'm no longer looking to rescue me from anything. I just need somebody who's got my back that'll be in it with me. And I have that, and I can look myself in the mirror and be at peace with what I see, like what I see, and just know that I'm doing the best that I can. And that if I don't get it right, that there's a way of making reparations, there's a way of amending things and moving forward. And it's just, it's unimaginable to me. I don't know how people live life without the 12 steps. I really don't. And I don't need to know. I just need to know what works for me, you know, and I'm just grateful that there's so many other people around that have found that same path, and then we get to travel it together. So I hope something I said was helpful. You know, just keep coming back. Thanks.